For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
I'd like to speak this morning about one of the most basic teachings in Buddhism, which we can call non-separation. So we have this illusion of things as separate, of things, objects, and we think of our selves as subjects and things out there as objects, or we could think of ourselves as objects too. And our whole way of thinking, our whole language is based on subject, verb, object. So most of our activity is about being subjects, verbing objects out there, or trying to prevent ourselves from being verbed by subjects out there. There's this deep sense of separation that is part of, we call it discriminating consciousness, our intelligence that discriminates this and that and various things or objects. This is how we think. This is our human way of thinking. Buddhism, on the other hand, is about the teaching and practice of non-separation. We could also call this interconnectedness, that actually each of us and everything in the world, anything you can point to, anything that you might point to is actually not separate, is deeply, deeply interconnected to everything else. That each of you is here this morning thanks to many causes and conditions and situations that allowed you to show up this morning. And as we sit on our cushions or chairs, many beings are part of what is sitting on our cushions or chairs. People you've known, even people you've just, you know, barely met, of course, friends and families and loved ones and so forth also very much. And also the things in your world, the places, you know, things in your home. All of that is part of what is happening as we sit here on our cushions or chairs. We're deeply, deeply interconnected with everything. We can't actually track or trace how deeply we are interconnected and how all the connections. So some of you are here for the first time this morning, and others of us who've been here many times, if we talk long enough, we'd find many connections that we may not have realized, places we've been in common, or people we've known, or situations we've been in, kinds of situations we've been in. We're deeply interconnected with each other and with the whole universe. So there weren't many ways of talking about this. Sometimes we talk about big mind, or the mind as not just, of course, your individual particular intelligence and awareness and sensations are included in this, but that mind as the quality of all being is another way this is talked about. Or non-self. So non-self, basic Buddhist teaching, doesn't mean we don't have a self. We all have egos. We all, you know, figured out how to get here this morning through, you know, knowing when to stop at the red light, or, you know, where the L station was, or however you got here. The route to walk and so forth. So we have selves, but non-self means that our self is not separate. Again, our self is deeply interconnected with many things. There is nothing, in fact, nobody and no thing that is an independent, separate, substantial, permanent self in and of itself. We are deeply interrelated by various causes and conditions. So there are many ways of talking about this in Zen and in Buddhism. We sometimes talk about it in terms of emptiness, that an emptiness doesn't mean nothingness, it means that we are empty of some independent, substantial self. Emptiness is a kind of technical term. It means there's nothing separate here or anywhere. We could talk about this in terms of relativity or interrelatedness too. One of the maybe more helpful images of this in Buddhism is Indra's net. Do you all know about Indra's net? New people, do you know about Indra's net? Okay, good. So I'll get to say it, talk about it. Indra's net is an image from Chinese Huayan Buddhism. Well, actually, it goes back to the Avatamsaka Flower Ornament Sutra. And it's a way of describing the whole universe as a kind of holograph that in this way of seeing reality, the whole universe is this vast network, net. And at each place where there's a node, where the meshes meet, there's a jewel. And each jewel reflects the light of the jewels reflected in the jewels around it. And each of those jewels reflects the light of all the light reflected by the jewels all around them, and so forth forever. So each particular person or thing or event is a total reflection or expression of totality of the whole universe. And of course, each particular jewel is particular and individual, just like each of us has our own, each of us have our own particular way of expressing Buddha, of being Buddha nature. So it's not that, it's not some mushy oneness where we're all just one thing. We talk about oneness, but it's, we also say not one, not two. In some sense, we're particular, individual, but we're not separate. And each non-separate, particular entity, jewel, person, whatever, totally reflects everything. In each in its own way, each in our own way. So this is all introduction to the story I want to talk about this morning. So I want to talk about a story and a writing by the 13th century Japanese Zen master Eihei Dogen, who I talk about often, who founded this branch of Zen we call Soto Zen. And in one of the essays in his in one of his great masterworks, Shobo Genzo, the True Dharma Eye Treasury, there's 195 different essays as part of that. And in one of them, he talks about a story from about a great Chinese Zen master from the 800s. And most of the, many of the great teaching stories in Zen are about masters from that, from the 800s in China. There's a lot going on in terms of all of this teaching. So the story is about a great teacher named Xuanzha. Xuanzha was, well, there's a lot to say about him, who he was as a character, but anyway, I'll just go launch into the story. And Dogen tells the story and then he comments on it, so I'm going to read the story and then talk about some of what Dogen says about it. A monk once asked Xuanzha, "I've heard you have said that the entire universe is one bright pearl. How can I get some understanding of that?" Xuanzha said, "The entire universe is one bright pearl. What is there to understand?" The next day, Xuanzha asked the monk, The entire universe is one bright pearl. What is your understanding of that? And the monk answered, the entire universe is one bright pearl. What need is there to understand? And Swancha said, now I know you're living in the cave of demons on Black Mountain. So it sounds like the monk repeated the statement of Swancha. There's more to it than that. Swancha said, the entire universe is one bright pearl. What is there to understand? When he asked the monk about it the next day, the monk said, the entire universe is one bright pearl. What need is there to understand? So, please do not take refuge in not understanding. That's not the point. Of course, we don't understand. But also sometimes we do understand. We can talk about this. So this story is important to me personally. The first time I ever heard about Dogen, I guess a couple of nights after I had my first Zazen instruction with Nakajima Sensei on the Upper West Side in New York, he talked about this story of one bright pearl. The entire universe is one bright pearl. So it's not just that the monk repeated what Swancha said, it's that he thought that what Swancha said, what is there to understand, means that, oh, we don't have to understand anything. Well, it's not that we have to understand anything, it's just that that's not the point. So, I've talked about this before, that there's various ways of knowing and there's various ways of not knowing. How do we understand the entire universe is one bright pearl without trying to get some understanding? So the point of all these teachings is not to figure them out. So, in terms of talking about interconnectedness and non-separation, you know, we can hear this as Dharma, as teaching, but the point is that in our Zazen, in our experience of just sitting, of being upright, relaxed and present, and paying attention to this body-mind, we start to not just understand or figure out or have some discriminating subject-object type consciousness or understanding of these things. We start to feel, actually, viscerally. We start to know in our bodies this non-separation, this interconnectedness. So, again, I recommend sitting regularly several times a week or more. As we settle into just being willing to be present in this body and mind, we realize, actually, that we're connected with each other and with many beings. And we start to actually feel this beyond discriminating understanding. The entire universe is one bright pearl. So, Dogen says about this, his first comment, it's the essence of it is this, that the entire universe is not vast and large and not minute and small. It's not square or round. It's not balanced nor correct. It's not the lively vigor of leaping fish. And it's not unbared and distinct all around. Moreover, because it is not birth and death and not is not coming and going, it is birth and death and it is coming and going. This being so, it is the past gone from here. It is the present come from here, from this one bright pearl. The entire universe is one bright pearl. So this is the kind of ultimate saying or utterance that, you know, you can, if you wish to sit with this, the entire universe is one bright pearl. Zen has many of these ultimate utterances, or utterances of the ultimate. But anyway, this one is pretty good. So then Dogen, he says, the entire universe is an unceasing process, pursuing things and making them the self, pursuing the self and making it things. This is the process of this one bright pearl of this entire universe. And then he refers to a story a monk once asked, I've heard that when sensations arise, one is separated from wisdom. That when thoughts stir, one is separated from the substance. But what of the time before sensations arise? And the teacher said, separated. So, you know, there's an impulse in Zen practice to try and put aside or even push away sensations, sounds, visual sensations, and thoughts. And there's a common thought that, oh, if we get rid of all thinking, that would be it. And that's not it, of course. So in the story, the student asks, I've heard that when sensations arise, one is separate from wisdom. When thoughts stir, one is separate from the substance, from the essence. What of the time before sensations arise? So it's possible in sitting, in just sitting, in settling into being present, to actually be there in the spaces between thoughts and feelings and sensations arising. And also to witness thoughts and feelings and sensations and perceptions arising. But the teacher said separate, even before, separate. This separation, the sense of separation is very deep. So Dogen says about this, the utterance separated in response to the question when sensations arise, one is separated from wisdom, is a turning of the head or a changing of the face, a laying open of things, and a seizing of opportunity. Can you see through this deep fundamental sense of separation and into this non-separation that is happening even when thoughts arise, even when we hear a sound or see a color? So this is Dogen turning this one bright pearl. He goes on to say, because of pursuing things and making them the self, the universe in its entirety is unceasing. Because its own nature is prior to such activity, it is ungraspable, even in the essence of the activity. So, the entire universe is one bright pearl. What is there to understand? What is there to grab? The entire universe, including your efforts or impulses to try and understand or grab things. It's just all one bright pearl. Dogen has more to say. He says, one bright pearl is able to express reality without naming it. And we can recognize this pearl as its name. One bright pearl communicates directly through all time, being unexhausted through all the past. It arrives through all the present, right now. In fact, the entire universe is one bright pearl. Then he turns it some more. The stalk of grass, this tree is not a stalk of grass, is not a tree. The mountains and rivers and the prairies and lakes of this world are not mountains and rivers and prairies and lakes of this world. They're all simply the one bright pearl. He says a lot more about this, but I'll explain a little bit. When the pearl is thus, when this one bright pearl is like this, is such, It hangs suspended in emptiness. It is attached within the lining of clothes. It is found under the chin of dragons and in the headdress of kings. All is the universe encompassing one bright pearl. He's referring to a couple of stories here about pearls or jewels, all of which are just hanging suspended in emptiness, which is this field of interrelatedness and non-separation. So he says it's attached within the lining of clothes. This is a story of a parable from the Lotus Sutra about a man who went to visit a friend, a very well-to-do friend, and they spent the night drinking. And then the host was called away, and his friend was sort of out of it. The host wanted his friend to be okay and not in need, and so he took a jewel or a bright pearl and sewed it into the lining of his clothes, so he would have that when he was in need. Years later, they met again, and the person who'd been the guest was in very bad shape and having had a very hard time. And the host said, "Oh, what happened? I gave you that big jewel to take care of you." And he said, "Oh, I didn't know." And he felt, and there it was, still in the lining of his clothes. So anyway, this is one story about a bright pearl. Dogen says it is found under the chin of dragons. So there's a story about dragons. There are many stories about dragons. We've talked about some of them, but dragons, and this is, you know, I don't know if there's a different species of dragon in Europe. In Europe, the dragons were sort of a little malevolent. In Asia, dragons are, you know, fly around and they're very wise and awakened and helpful beings. Anyway, it's said, I think, for both European and East Asian dragons, that they have a jewel under their chin. They actually, dragons sometimes have caves where they keep many jewels. So dragons have great resources. And again, if you swim through the dragon gate, you can become a dragon. Anyway. So in the headdresses of kings, so there's also a story about jewels in the top knots of great bodhisattvas or kings. Anyway, Dogen says about all of these stories that they are pearls hanging suspended in emptiness, and that the whole universe, the entire universe, is this encompassing bright pearl. Although its face seems to keep on changing, turning and stopping, it is the same bright pearl. Knowing that the pearl is indeed like this, that itself is the bright pearl. I read that again. Knowing that the pearl is indeed like this, that itself is this one bright pearl. In this way, the colorations and configurations of the bright pearl are encountered. So the entire universe is one bright pearl, but it's not that we can't meet its configurations, its colorations, its qualities. When it is thus, Dogen goes on, there is no reason to doubtingly think that you are not the pearl, because you perplexedly think, "I'm not the pearl." Perplexing thoughts, doubts, questions, and our accepting or rejecting are but passing trivial notions. Of course, the entire universe is one bright pearl. All of our skepticism is just, you know, some trivial notion. It is, moreover, only the one bright pearl appearing as a trivial notion. So Dogen plays with this pearl to show us how all-encompassing it is. He says at the end of this essay, even when you are perplexed or troubled, those perplexed or troubled thoughts are not apart from the one bright pearl. So, of course, we have many reasons in our life, in our individual lives, in our difficulties with people around us, and in the terrible difficulties we have now in our society, and as well as in the wonderful things that are happening in the world. There is the opportunity for perplexed or troubled thoughts, wondering what to do, wondering how to help a particular friend or family member, wondering how to engage together. Of course, we have, this is part of our thinking. But again, Dogen says, even when you are perplexed or troubled, those perplexed or troubled thoughts are not apart from the one bright pearl. As there are no deeds or thoughts produced by something that is not the bright pearl, both coming and going in the Black Mountains Cave of Demons are themselves nothing but the one bright pearl. So that's in the story about Xuan Zhe, when the monk just repeated what he said and seemed to think, oh, he didn't have to think, worry about understanding anything, because what is there to understand? And Xuan Zhe said, oh, now I know you're practicing in the Cave of Demons on Black Mountain. But at the end, Dogen says, both coming and going in the Black Mountains Cave of Demons are themselves nothing but the one bright pearl. So this is a way, this story about the entire universe being one bright pearl is a way of seeing this fundamental wholeness that we actually meet when we're willing to settle into just being present and upright. The entire universe is one bright pearl. What is there to understand or worry about? And yet the entire universe is one bright pearl, including your thoughts and your worries and your sensations and your perplexity. Now, he talks about this Black Demon's Cave. This is a kind of Zen slang for one way we can really misunderstand that the entire universe is one bright pearl. These kinds of utterances, these kinds of sayings, you know, can be deeply comforting. Even your confusion and misunderstanding is part of totality, is part of this deeper wholeness, is an expression or a reflection or a facet of this one bright pearl. What's there to understand? It's not a matter of figuring something out. And yet, there's this idea of practitioners holding on to that in a way that they fall into the demon's cave, it's said. And this is a kind of Zen slang for one thing that can happen if you meditate a lot, which I encourage you to do, regularly, in a way that you can sustain a practice of being present and upright. But sometimes you may feel like, oh, the entire universe is one bright pearl, and you may feel great relief, and you may feel great comfort, and you may feel the great radiance of the one bright pearl sitting on your cushion or chair. And that's great if you do that. But then the danger of that is that we can become attached to that. We can bliss out. It's possible. It's actually, you know, practicing like this in an urban storefront lay sangha, you know, is a kind of antidote to that, because you've all got to go out into the world of Chicago and meet various people and do various things, and so it's hard to hold on to some attachment to emptiness. The most dangerous attachment, according to the great teachers of non-attachment, is the attachment to non-attachment. So this is what Xuan Zhe was referring to. So I think it's okay for you to hear that the entire universe is one bright pearl. But just don't think that that means that you don't have to take care of your life, that you don't have to respond to the world and the people around you, and to and so we have the Bodhisattva precepts as guidelines to how to take care of the awareness of the one bright pearl when you're out there in the world. How to be careful out there. How to take care of the one bright pearl. And yet, please enjoy the reality that the entire universe is one bright pearl. And the entire universe is not at all separate from the entire universe sitting on your cushion or chair right now. So there's a way in which Zen teaching, Dogen's writing, and the practice of Zazen is deeply comforting. We can connect with wholeness. And part of that connection is then, okay, how do we, you know, take responsibility for how we express that? So after this, we will have temple cleaning to take care of the space. And after that, when you go out into the world, or go over to Rib Fest or whatever, you know, how do we take care of ourselves in that situation? The entire universe is one bright pearl. What is there to understand? So, questions, comments, responses about this or anything else, please feel free. Tom.
I think there's a line in the Heart Sutra that's something to the extent that form is not separate from emptiness, emptiness is not separate from form.
Exactly.
And so is it that contradictions are like indivisible, or is it just that there's another alternative that hasn't been considered?
Contradictions.
Well, you know, I guess that's sort of math speak for X and not X. Form and emptiness could be thought of as X and.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the Heart Sutra is trying to. That thought is what the Heart Sutra is trying to counteract.
Right.
So emptiness is not yet another thing that you can get. Emptiness is not something outside of forms. Emptiness is not blank space. So, emptiness is not other than form. Emptiness is the way forms is. They're not separate. There's no emptiness outside of forms. Emptiness is how, is the expression, is what, all forms are empty because they're not separate. And forms are all characterized by this quality of emptiness or interrelatedness. But then you talked about contradictions, and you said contradictions are not indivisible. What did you mean?
Well, usually something that's true and something that's the negation of that are distinctly separate. And if they're true at the same time, you have to resolve it by saying that there's really yet some other, there's a why, there's some other thing that somehow resolves the two of these apparent contradictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way of thinking in discriminating consciousness, that there's X and Y, and then there's some synthesis of that. That's kind of dialectical thinking. That's part of Buddhist philosophy, but I don't like the word contradictions in terms of Buddhism, because contradiction means that there's contrary dictums. There's one dictum over here and one dictum over there. This isn't about some ideal or idea or doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
This is about practice. And in practice, these teachings are not theoretical. They are actually about our experience and our experience of sitting. So, um, in the lodge, so all of these koan stories, all of this Buddhist teaching is about this deeper reality of the entire universe as one bright pearl. And in that sense, you know, maybe we can talk about paradox, because it is paradoxical to our usual way of thinking.
That's a good one.
So I prefer that word. But but the point is that... yeah, that of course X and not X are part of the same thing. We couldn't have warmth without cold. We couldn't have goodness without harm, and vice versa. Everything is defined in terms of something that seems to be... X can only be defined by that which is not X. So there could not be Tom in the world if there wasn't all the things that are not Tom. In fact, Tom is, by definition, the totality of all the not Tom. All of the not Tom in the entire universe allows you to be sitting there this morning. So they're not really... So in terms of the logic of awakening, which is what we're here to study and practice, and experience and express, there's no contradiction, and I would say even there's no paradox, although it's, of course, to our usual way of thinking, it seems paradoxical. And that's, you know, that's a good question, because that's the question that we have when we hear that the entire universe is one bright pearl. Well, what about, you know, the difference between, I don't know, beer and wine? They're not the same. Take any two things that we think are different. And yet, the entire universe is one bright pearl. So this deeper logic, form is empty, and emptiness is in forms. It's not somewhere else. It's not yet another thing. You can't go down to the store and get a six-pack of emptiness. It just doesn't work that way. So thank you for your question. Other comments, questions, responses? Laurel.
This is a little different, but it's an interesting book written in, I think, the 70s, maybe the early 80s, when a lot of us were understanding ecology a little different. And it's called Lives of the Cell by Lewis Thomas, who's
not
an ecologist but a physician.
Yes.
And he looked at the world and all the various parts of it, including people, and his conclusion at the end of this lovely little book is that it operates just like a cell, like one single cell, and every single part had to do with the functioning of the cell. And of course, cells are part of organism. This is a biological take on the same, the world of the universe is one bright pearl. It's very well written and very insightful and humorous and sort of deeply felt. And so I recommend it. If you're struggling, it helped me a lot. Think about this oneness.
Yes, I like that book very much too. Lewis Thomas, Lives, what's it
called? I think it's called Lives of the Cell.
Yeah.
So it's Lewis, L-E-W-I-S.
Good, thank you. Yes, wonderful book. I recommend it too. And, you know, the various ways of seeing this. So there's also this idea of Gaia, that this planet is a living system. It seems to me, in some sense, kind of obvious that we are affected by the quality of the ocean and by the damage that's happening to the ocean now, and the forests and the mountains and the rivers and the lakes. Everything actually affects each one of us, and vice versa. We have a responsibility because we're not separate, and that the whole planet, geologically, biologically, I don't know, in some ways, is this one living system. Now, in some ways, Xuanzha goes beyond that. He says the entire universe. So, you know, can we extrapolate to this solar system or this galaxy or all the galaxies? Or anyway, that's maybe not relevant to us. What in practice, you know, how in practice do we take care of this world and each of our worlds of associations and people and activities here in Chicago? So yes, thank you very much. It's a very, very much comparable idea. Yes, hi.
It occurs to me, sometimes when you get really worried about something or not vexed or you're working out some issue with somebody else or some. It is sort of comforting to realize that, you know, maybe you think, okay, my practice is getting a little weak because I can't cope with this or handle this or I'm responding appropriately. And then you realize that is practice. And so in a way, you never really have a time when you're not practicing. It's all. It's just walking around the floors.
Yes, good, Jerry. Yes, yes, yes. And as Dogen suggests here, in our perplexity, in our right in the middle of our problems, this is the one bright pearl. So, in some sense, we need our problems. That's how we see that it's all one bright pearl. That's how our practice grows. These questions and this questioning and this, you know, the difficulties we have are great opportunities to express the one bright pearl. Kaysan.
You spoke earlier about the sort of function of our mind as colored by our language about creating subjects and verbs and objects.
Yes.
And I mean, that's, and this kind of quality of discriminating consciousness. And I don't know, I've just been experiencing lately through maybe this foundational practice that, well, maybe Buckminster Fuller too, that we're all verbs, and it's the name of one of these books. And so I had this experience on the train yesterday where I just looked out and I saw this kind of blossoming world, all the trees and the plants and everything's in full kind of vigor of the season. And
yes.
It just seemed like trees were treeing. It's even actually in our language as we're living and buildings are building, you know. Like
yes.
It's already there. We don't need to add the extra thing, but maybe I was thinking about this as I'm just looking at that building is coming. It's coming. The buildings are coming into being, and they're going out of being. Trees are coming into being. Anyway, I just had a very physical sensation of, you know, that this contrast between when we think of ourselves as an object and then these other objects, and it feels kind of fixed and rigid, and there's like actually space between things. But then when you start experiencing the verbness of things, it all feels much more. Well, like, I know Laura practices Tai Chi, and in Tai Chi, the teachers say to feel the air like molasses or water, like you're moving it. And that's another indication. What the actual physical feeling, I think, is, you know, this is all just coming out of practice. And I was just thinking about all these things.
Yeah. So thank you. Yes, it's a basic Buddhist teaching that all nouns are actually verbs. That everything is flowing and active in process, and that, and actually in Japanese is neat because you can take almost any noun, maybe any noun, and put a tsuru after it. So, you know, whatever cup tsuru means picking up the cup, or, you know, any noun can become a verb in the Japanese language. But actually, things are in process. And that's the whole point. So to think that the entire universe is one bright pearl and to think the one bright pearl is some dead object, that's not it. The one bright pearl is alive and flowing and shifting and dynamic. So thank you. Josh, you had me?
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, like, Kaysan said that, but this idea of the pearl on the cell doesn't quite fit either, because it presents sort of a limit on the universe, right? And so maybe if you think of it more as a verb in the universe, in the act of becoming a bright pearl, or in the act of
living
as itself. But I guess my image of a pearl, I think of a boundary of a limit.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah. Yeah, the pearl is pearling. It's becoming a pearl. And yeah, so I don't understand physics. Are there any physicists here?
Pearls are dynamic. I mean, pearls are being created. They're pearls on a necklace just sit there.
Pearls are actually natural biological products from oysters,
exactly.
and they're caused by irritations.
And there's secretions that keep growing around.
Yeah, pearls can grow, and then there's those pearls that aren't perfectly round. But still, the idea of pearls as bounded, and I from what I understand, that the view of Einstein and modern physicists is that the universe is kind of has a boundary, and I don't. So that would.
Although they recently found out they think it doesn't.
Well, yeah, I don't think. Yeah, my first conversion experience, my first awakening experience, was lying on the grass when I was 14, looking up at the skies, and somehow I had this visceral sense that it must be infinite. How could there be some edge or end to that? And therefore that was true in time too. And so I converted to atheism because I realized that the idea of a creator deity just didn't make any sense to me anymore. I still feel that way. But then people who actually have faith in God. God can be understood in lots of different ways. But anyway, the idea of some limit in time or space I have to agree with you. It doesn't make sense to me. So all of these metaphors are just that. But yeah, pearls can grow. I appreciate your calling attention to that sense of boundary. And maybe Einstein's right. I don't know. Maybe the universe is kind of has some edge. I don't know what that means. I can't imagine that myself. But anyway, it's getting a little past time. We can continue this discussion later.